second hour, Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5, The Game. Behind the scenes is always fun. One day, Chase, we'll release a book or a documentary on behind the scenes.
Oh, yeah.
It's so much fun in this business.
It is.
Elijah, good hustle by him behind the scenes.
We sweating back here today.
Man, did
we're
I
breaking
good,
a sweat.
I could just feel his...
A lot of face palms behind the scenes.
Well, he was trying to stop something from happening, social media-wise, like a scheduled thing. And so he got it just in the nick of time.
I found out what I needed to find out within 10 seconds of me having to take action.
Yep, it happens.
I almost dove across the studio. It was a diving play. If there's cameras here, it's a SportsCenter top 10
Elijah,
play,
back in my producing days, I have done that. I think my best moment was somebody said something they weren't supposed to say, and I had stood up to go get something from the other side of the control room.
Oh no!
And I dove across the room, hit the chair, slid face first into the desk, hit the dump button, and then fell into the floor.
Ooh, just in the nick of time too. It's that that split second oh blank moment yes. that you get when it first happens that makes you feel a little more alive than you did earlier.
Yes.
I don't mean to be laughing, Elijah. It was the way you were describing it just cracked me up. I could visualize exactly what was going on during that break for you. Good job by you. So this is what we've learned during the break. I guess there are some issues scheduling wise or technical issues, I'm not sure, or maybe they're running behind schedule wise. Remember, everybody from the Western Conference that is in this qualifying round and round robin play is all at one location. So
yes,
I can imagine there is a lot of juggling. And oh, by the way, you don't have the normal staffs that would be on these trips. So there's, little manpower, so to speak, because the staffs are very small and the people that represented each organization going. So there's a lot of moving parts in both Edmonton and Toronto. So I think we're going to get pushed back a little bit later this hour. That is the current plan.
Looks like 11:45.
I think what was supposed to happen was he was supposed to have spoken with the media last hour when we were on the air, and then I think right now actually he's speaking from Edmonton. So he's doing his obligation now. So it may be a little bit later this hour, maybe at the bottom of the hour or so, we can talk to head coach John Hines. We brought this up earlier, and I said, man, if you want must-see TV, watch the Dodgers and the Astros. Did you see Joe Kelly last night? So I think you were saying that you didn't watch the game.
No, but I've seen highlights and replays.
Oh, my gosh.
And I know that there are people that aren't happy about it, and we have an Astros fan that listens to the show that wasn't happy about everything that happened, but this is what we were afraid of, that there were going to be things that happen whenever the it's on ESPN right now. So Kelly throwing at the head of Bregman, which I will agree, you don't throw at a guy's head. I understand. And then Correa, and then he goes after Correa.
Yep.
If you want to hit him, hit him.
Hit him.
I have zero. I have
hip,
never
leg,
had a,
arm. You know,
sure. Hit him. Hit
ribs.
Him in the,
whatever.
Hit him in the ribs. Whatever. I have never had a problem with that unwritten rule in baseball of if a guy does something that either is bad against your team or he breaks an unwritten rule or whatever, then hit him. I'm fine with that. Just don't hit him in the head. Don't aim at the head. Because that can kill a guy. It's just, if you hit him in the arm, fine. Beam him. Whatever. And if you're the Astros and that's what a team does to you, you stand there and you take it and you don't say a word. But if they throw at your head, I understand. I get that. That's crossing the line. And that's one of those two wrongs don't make a right necessarily. I mean, because again, you can kill a guy by hitting him in the head. But yeah, I did. They were just showing it on ESPN of what Joe Kelly did.
And then he struck out Correa, and boy, the stuff that he did walking off the mound at Correa, This is what it's going to be like, pal.
It is, and they're going to have to take it. And you know, I don't know if at some point baseball has to step in and say, okay, point proven. They understand. Now you got to stop. I don't know if they need or should do that. But again, this is
Hold on. Stop right there. So let me ask you: do you think they should? If you're Rob Manfred, you think he should do that?
If a pitcher,
you think he should step in and say enough is enough?
If a pitcher keeps throwing at guys' heads, yes. If it's simply just a, you know, I'm going to back you off the plate, and if I hit you, I hit you in the, you know, in the lower or the upper body, you know, somewhere in there, hit you in the arm, the ribs, what have you. Okay.
But what if it? Well, okay, then what if I say that's what I was aiming for, and it sailed on me. I wasn't aiming for his head. I was aiming for his ribs. It just got away.
But it went to his head, and it happened more than one time.
I can't control that. I threw at his ribs and it went high. I mean, what do you want me to do?
Yeah, but the whole game, like multiple batters, you're going to believe
I'm
that?
Just
from
saying,
multiple
what
batters?
If that? What if that's what the Dodgers say?
Then
what
you're
going
to
that's
to
their
sit,
story.
Then you will have to step in, and
okay. Hey, Rob, did you know this was going on? Did you know this was going on?
That's exactly what's going to come up.
Exactly. Wait a minute. Now you want to step in when you knew, right? Baseball knew, and yet they didn't step in? This is where they get themselves in trouble, right? When
they are.
No stuff is going on, and they don't step in and squash it. It's just like the whole steroid. They know. They know this stuff, and yet they don't fix it. And then now this is the fallout you get. So, okay, what you didn't choose to do anything at the time when you knew. They know. Players talk. People talk. Inside those circles, they all knew what was going on. We've talked to enough people. They all knew it. Tell me baseball at the top didn't know? Give me a break. Okay, so this is the fallout. What do you want them to do? Just accept it? Be okay with it?
No,
not be bad?
Shouldn't. No, they should be mad.
And by the way, they should be mad at baseball because baseball didn't do anything about it.
Yeah, well, and Rob Manfred is showing just how he has some great leadership skills. I mean, he's looked just bad during this entire thing, the last 6 months, whether it's COVID or handling this situation. I don't think he's looked very good. But I didn't really like his predecessor much either. So, it just kind of is what it is. But I understand retaliation. I'm fine with retaliation. Just don't throw it at a guy's head. That's my thing. Because
I'm with you. I'm not saying I am not advocating throwing it at anybody's head ever. I don't think you should do it. It's way too dangerous at this level, especially. And you shouldn't do it really. You shouldn't do it at any level, period.
Yeah.
You shouldn't throw it at. There's other places to throw. I'm not saying that. I'm just simply saying what. Did we not think? Yes, we absolutely thought this was going to happen. We knew this was going to happen. We were talking about it 4.5 months ago, 5 months ago, 6 months ago. Of course we knew this was going to happen. So why are we all surprised today that it happened?
Did you think
because it's a pandemic that was going to go away? I think we've realized in 2020 nothing's going to go away.
Well, and I do believe that there were some people that thought, oh, okay. Not starting on time. People are going to forget about They cheated the game. You're not going to forget about it. The steroid thing happened 20 years ago, and we're still talking about it. So it's not going to go away. But, again, it just there are certain lines that you cannot cross, and Joe Kelly can sit there and say, oh, it got away from me. I wasn't aiming for his head. Well, it happened twice. It happened to Correa. Happened to Bregman. Okay? So, I'm not.
I didn't say I would believe that story. I'm just saying if he countered with that, what do you say? I didn't say I believe him.
Sure.
I think we both know and everybody knew what he was doing. But I'm saying if that is his counter to a conversation with the commissioner, what do you say? I wasn't throwing at him. It got away. It sailed high on me. I wasn't trying to throw at his head. I was trying to throw, you know, behind him.
Well, unfortunately, the only thing you can say is, well, if it gets away from you like that again, it's a 10-game suspension or whatever. I mean, that's what they're going to be in.
Then when you do that, think about the whole new can that you're opening up.
Oh, I know. No, it's a lose-lose situation for baseball because, again, they botched it from the beginning. They knew it was happening. It's just like all the other scandals that they've had that, oh, hey, we know, hey, you stop banging on that trash can. I'm taking that trash can away. Bad. Bad Astros. Yeah. Don't you do it. That's how they handle everything.
Let's go to Kathy. Kathy, what's up?
Hi, Kathy.
Hey, guys. How y'all doing today?
We're good.
We're good.
Good. I actually watched the game.
Yeah.
Where you guys have admitted you didn't watch the game.
No, I did not. I didn't admit to anything. I was watching.
Okay. So when he struck Correa out, okay, Correa swung at that, which I don't think he should have swung at that pitch. But anyway.
The one in the dirt?
Yes. When he I have my issues with Correa right now. But anyway, but he scored all the runs yesterday.
I was going to say, he had a bomb off Walker Buehler early on.
He did. But what happened was Correa swung at that pitch. Joe Kelly starts walking off the field, turns around, looks at Correa, and says, nice swing.
And then stuck his tongue out at him.
Yes. Darren, Maddox wouldn't have done that on the ball field. Joe Kelly was acting like a five-year-old on the ball field. Yes, I agree with you. Throw at them. Yes, they're going to get it. They cheated. They shouldn't have done it. Yes, I'm all for that. I'm an Astros fan. You know I love my Astros. But they cheated, and they're going to have to suffer the repercussions for that. But Joe Kelly, what he did last night was unprofessional. And for the fact that he was playing for the Red Sox, who were caught cheating. Oh, it was a video replay guy. I'm sorry. But they still cheated. Everybody cheats. But anyway, the other thing, too, that I have issue with is that, Lord, it just went out of my brain. Anyway, for him to act like a five-year-old on the baseball field was utterly ridiculous.
I will admit that was surprising to see him stick his tongue out. A professional athlete stick his tongue out at another professional athlete was a little strange, but
all pouty about it. I mean, you know what I mean? So it's ridiculous. But anyway, we'll see what happens in the next game.
The only thing missing, Kathy, was him putting his hands up, you know, on the side of his head and moving his hands while he was sticking his tongue out.
I know. I think that's ridiculous. But anyway, yes, they're going to get retaliation, and I'm okay with that because, you know, even though I'm an Astros fan, I'm okay with that.
You got to take it.
You got to take it. But let's play the game, okay? And let's be adults about it too, Mr. Joe Kelly. I mean, that's what I think is ridiculous. But anyway,
that's
my two cents on it. And, you know, people can agree to disagree with me. I don't care. But the fact of the matter is that it is what it is. You don't throw at a player's head.
Yeah.
You don't ever do that.
Well, we are all in agreements on that.
Yes.
That should not happen.
Yes.
But I
love you guys.
All right. Thank you, Kathy. This is not going to go away between these two teams. And by the way.
And it shouldn't.
They play tonight, I'm assuming, right?
Yeah, it's on ESPN.
Yeah. by the way, their ratings are going to probably be pretty good tonight.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to watch.
People are going to tune in.
Yeah, of course they are. And my whole thing is it shouldn't go away. You shouldn't let them off the hook that easily. They need to take it. And they are. They have been. They did, you know, through spring training, and I don't think they necessarily handled it with their statements and, you know, reading from a piece of paper. And, you know, I haven't seen a whole lot of remorse, but now you just got to take it. You just got to stand up there, and you know, all right, there's going to be some teams that I go up against that I'm probably going to take one in the arm, and I just need to prepare for that and then move on. Joe Kelly took it too far. The tongue thing, and now I don't know if I agree. Maddox might have done that at one point in time. I don't know if he would now. Coach Darren wouldn't like that very much.
I haven't seen him do that, so Kathy, to this point, is correct. I've never seen him do that on the baseball field, and he's played a lot of baseball games to this point. I've never seen him do that. I'm not saying it will never happen. I'm just saying I haven't seen him do it to this point.
Yeah, well, that's good because Maddox is a professional in 8U, so He needs to stay that way. But
I did see him and one of our other players chest bump each other after a great play to end an inning over the weekend. That was the first time I'd ever seen that. I thought that was – we all got a big kick out of that. We were all cracking up. I've never seen 2 8-year-olds run full speed at each other and jump up in the air and chest bump each other. I'd never seen him do that. So that was kind of cool. But, no, I've never seen him stick his tongue out.
Yeah. We got a text in here that says, "Wow, he made faces at cheaters. Maybe he wouldn't have struck him out if they had had the trash cans."
That game tonight is at 6 o'clock on ESPN, Houston and L.A. Like I said, I have a feeling they're going to have a lot of eyeballs on that game tonight. I think every time the Dodgers and the Astros play, baseball is going to get rewarded with good ratings because people are going to tune in to see this because I don't think it's going to stop. And I don't think I don't pretend to know how Rob Manfred thinks because I question a lot of things he does. But I just can't imagine that right now they're telling them, "Hey, you guys, you stop it.
Knock it off.
You go to your room. You stop it, Joe." I don't think that's going on. So I anticipate probably more fireworks tonight. And who knows? By the way, at what point does Houston retaliate? When do they start saying enough is enough? I'm sick of this crap. Because they're taking it now. Yeah. We're five games in. How long are they going to take this if this keeps up before they blow?
Yeah, but
they blow their lid.
Like if they did retaliate.
Wow, you got nothing from you, man. All right.
What? I'm sorry.
Nothing.
I was thinking in my response. It's my bad. It just went completely over my head.
So if this keeps up tonight, is Houston going to turn around and they're going to start doing the same thing?
I don't know. I don't think they should.
At some point, you know they're going to be like, "Man, I'm sick of this crap." Even if we all sit here and go, "You deserve it. You know, take your medicine." That's great. That's all of us can say that. We're not in that position. We're not in the batter's box, you know, taking 97-mile-per-hour, you know, balls at our head. So it's easy for us to say, sitting back watching, "Hey, just take your medicine." At some point, they're human beings and they're professional athletes. They're going to be like, enough is enough. Like, I'm tired of this crap. Let's retaliate. We'll do the same thing to them. How you like this?
How you like me now? Yeah, I know if I was on the Dodgers, I wouldn't throw it a guy. I would just walk out and of the dugout with a trash can and just set it on the field, not say anything.
I don't think you're allowed to do that.
Probably not, but it'd be funny.
Yeah. All right, we will come back. Hopefully we will be able to catch up with Predators head coach John Hines this hour. Alex Apple at High Noon will tell you about all the decisions that were made yesterday from Governor Bill Lee. More of Darren, Donick, and Chase on the other side, ESPN 102.5 The Game. You can stream us anywhere in the world or in the U.S., the beach, if you're in Houston, the Astros-Dodgers game, you can stream us right there. All you have to do is download the Game Natural app. That's free and easy to do, or you can enable Alexa Skill or Google Home if you have that set up in rooms in your house or the office. I do, and you just ask it to play 102.5 The Game, or you can live stream from our website, which is thegamenashville.com. Just saw this from Richard Deitch, a buddy that's been on here for years on this show. He said, per the NBA, he just tweeted this out, of the 344 players that have been tested for COVID-19 since test results were last announced on July 20th, so 9 days ago, how many have returned confirmed positive test? Chase. How many have returned confirmed positive test?
I will say 10.
Of the 344 players tested for COVID-19 9 days ago, how many have returned confirmed positive tests? Chase's guess is 10. Is he correct?
No.
Incorrect. The answer is 0.
Zero
have come back.
0.
Positive test. 0.0. So good for the NBA. oh, by the way, as they're getting ready to return to play as well, just like the NHL we've been talking about. And speaking of, what am I doing? I guess I got caught up in the Astros-Dodgers thing. I need to get over to NHL Network.
Yes.
And watch the battle of the state of Florida, Lightning and Panthers, as no score midway through the first. Okay. But how about that? That is really good news on the NBA front. NHL and NBA, as they are getting ready to get going. And so far, knock on wood, that it is going well, right? That is great news.
Oh, it's awesome news, and it shows you that the bubble model works. And this is what I'm afraid of with baseball. Obviously, we've already seen it with a team that they now have 29 teams and not 30 because the Marlins are inactive. At this point, the NFL, I worry about the same thing. I understand the logistics behind trying to pull off the bubble model with those sports, but the NHL and the NBA are showing that it's working. MLS is showing that it's working outside of what happened with Nashville FC and Dallas, Nashville SC and FC Dallas. So once they got past that, you know, it's worked. So the bubble model where the league has control, they're able to keep this thing contained. So I think that that's huge, and I believe they're going to be successful. You know, I felt that the NHL had the best model. I was worried about the NBA, that just, you know, guys sneaking out or whatever. I was a little concerned with that, but they have everything contained. So that's good. That's awesome news.
The Nashville Sounds have issued a statement on that, you know, alternate season at First Horizon Park.
Yep.
That we talked to their general manager, Adam Noose, about, and they have just released something, and I'll let you read it unless you want me to.
No, I got it. The Nashville Sounds Baseball Club has issued the following statement on the 2020 alternate season at First Horizon Park. The Nashville Sounds Baseball Club has made the difficult decision to forego the 2020 alternate season at First Horizon Park. With the rapidly changing state of the pandemic in Davidson County, Nashville, it has become clear the unique idea is not possible for many reasons outside of our control. We appreciate the outpouring of support from our loyal season ticket members and baseball fans alike. We remain hopeful of safely hosting non-baseball events at First Horizon Park in the near future. And that is the statement from the Nashville Sounds.
Well, I don't think that's going to come as any surprise. It stinks that that it's now official, but I think we suspected that was going to be the case. And it's unbelievable to know that this 60-game season, when it comes to professionals in baseball, that is it. That is the only level of professional baseball that will be played here this season in the U.S. And it's sad, you know, but that's it. We've got the major league season, 60 games. I don't know. The Marlins, maybe less. I don't know what they're going to do about the games they're missing, but that's it. And everything below them, no baseball.
Yeah. And that's really unfortunate because it was going to be a cool idea. I mean, you think about some of the free agents that were out there. I mean, Yasiel Puig is still one of them after he tested positive and did not sign with the Atlanta Braves, even though still kind of wonder if that'll happen. But, you know, at one time he was one that could have been considered and some others. But it just is what it is. And this is the ever-changing world that we live in with this virus, and I thought it was an awesome idea. Kudos to the Sounds for trying to pull it off, and just unfortunate that they were unable to do so because of, as they said, things outside of their control.
What has been interesting is the contracts that we're seeing signed during this pandemic. You know, it really is. I think that is the part that has really surprised me, with not knowing exactly how the future will look or hold. I mean, has the NFL been bashful about signing contracts this offseason?
No.
Chargers just gave Joey Bosa a 5-year extension worth $135 million.
Good to be him.
It's great to be him. But you think about what the Chiefs did, and I get it. They won the Super Bowl, so you know, you could chalk it up as they had no choice. Kind of like what we used to say about Baltimore after they beat the 49ers in the Super Bowl and said, yeah, they have no choice with Flacco. They got to pay him the big bucks. They just won a Super Bowl. So I'm going to probably let them slide.
Yeah, but they had a choice. They didn't have to – and I understand that they're going to – the contract's going to change after 4 or 5 years, but they didn't have to sign him to what they did. They
By the way, do you remember the day right as we were ending the show what I said when we said – we have breaking news, and I said the Chiefs have just handed over the franchise to Patrick Mahomes. Like, I was actually onto it more than I thought. Like, he
Wrong
does
franchise,
have
but...
he does have ownership.
He does. Yep, the Royals.
Oh, my gosh.
Is that where his dad played? Did his dad play for the Royals?
Yeah. Yep. He did.
So, see, that's cool that they're both, you know, playing in the same city, and that's a – you've been to Arrowhead, right?
I've been to Arrowhead, yes. I've not been to Kauffman Stadium.
I haven't been to Kauffman, but I thought it was cool that they're right there next to each other. Like they share parking lots.
Yeah.
So it's a cool setup that they have in Kansas City. And I know that they I had a friend go to Kauffman Stadium recently, and he had been before. They renovated it and did a lot to it. Really made it nice. So that's – but, yeah, Patrick Mahomes, he got paid, and he's like, oh, I'm going to buy a team. I'm going to invest for the future.
Unbelievable. So the so you think about Mookie Betts' deal with the Dodgers. The Chargers, you know, just gave Joey Bosa $135 million. Miles Garrett got the big monster deal in Cleveland. By the way, Joey Bosa got – did he not – he got more than Garrett, right? Garrett got $125 million. Bosa got 135,
yeah.
And I'm like, probably give Miles Garrett more money than Joey Bosa. That's just me.
Yep.
I mean, I'd probably give the slight edge that Garrett is the better player,
yeah,
my
I
opinion.
Would agree. I would agree.
And it's not like, you know, Garrett signed his last year, and it's just like, well, that's just what happens, you know,
signed
every year.
Last month.
It goes up. Yeah, it was like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
So I was a little surprised, but I guess I'm bringing this up to say, are we not a little – does it look like there's apprehension from the league or from the teams and the organizations to be like, I don't know. I don't know if we should, you know, be doling out big bucks in these times. Well, nobody seems to be scared. And I know there's some free agents in the NFL that'll be like, now, wait a minute. You know, Clowney was saying, I'm like, now, wait a minute. I haven't seen that, you know, or, you know, some other – by the way, there's some pretty notable names. As we know, Logan Ryan just sitting out there, don't have a team. Devontae Freeman, don't have a team.
Well, I think some of that is because, you know, those are guys that you want to bring in. You want to bring in – and I understand there are others, but free agency started as this was kind of beginning. So I know that, you know, we were already working from home and all of that, but – there are some guys that you want to see with your own two eyes. You don't want to see them on a Zoom before you give them a contract. So that's what I think has happened with Logan Ryan and Freeman and obviously Jadeveon Clowney. But the NFL has kind of had this mindset from the very beginning of, all right, business as usual. We're going to take it day by day. We're going to put our protocols in place, but we're playing and we're going to keep moving on with this season. And that's what they've done. And, you know, baseball, since they got back, I mean, so far that's kind of what they're doing. I mean, I texted you while I was gone of, wow, Mookie, good for him. But I honestly didn't think it was going to happen this soon.
Not during this. No.
I thought that he was going to have to wait till the offseason. And quite frankly, I thought that he'd probably end up being back with the Red Sox. I thought the Red Sox would, even though they made him an offer before and he didn't take it, but I thought that they might circle back around, but he got it done. He's going to be with the Dodgers, and good for him. But you do bring up an interesting point that in the middle of all of this, these contracts are still being handed out. Like, these leagues are going, yeah, we're losing some money during this, but we're going to get it back, and we're going to bounce back better than ever after this is done. So I hope they're right.
I'm glad they feel good about it, but jeez, I did not think that would be the approach. I thought it would be more of, yeah, we love, you know, talking to the agent, yeah, we love your guy, we love him here, but gosh, I mean, we don't know what the cap situation will be like. We don't know how much we're going to lose this season. Yeah, we just can't do that. That's not what the market is going to bear, and that's just not the approach they're taking. Braden Point has just tallied a goal for the Lightning, so they're first one to break through. Lightning up 1-0 over the Panthers in their exhibition game. That's the first of six today. They'll be on NHL Network and NBC Sports Network throughout the day. We will come back. More of Darren, Donick, and Chase on the other side. ESPN 102.5 The Game. Back around Darren, Donick, and Chase on this Wednesday. Hope everybody's having a good day to this point. Hopefully we'll be able to connect with Predators head coach John Hines before we get out of here this hour from Edmonton. Right now they are playing in Toronto, Tampa, and Florida. 1-0 Lightning with about 4 minutes to go in the first. That is one of six exhibition games, as there were three yesterday. Pittsburgh fell to the Flyers in overtime. Philadelphia wins 3-2. Montreal fell to Toronto 4-2. And then in the nightcap, it was all Edmonton as the Oilers take care of business and beat the Flames 4-1. So Tampa and Florida right now at 1:30 Central Time. It'll be Minnesota and Colorado. That should be an interesting exhibition game. Then Washington and Carolina, Chicago and St. Louis. The Rangers and the Islanders will be at 7 o'clock tonight. And then in the nightcap, it'll be Winnipeg and Vancouver. And that, too, should be an awesome one. And, of course, the Predators will get the action started tomorrow. There will be three exhibition games tomorrow. And the Predators and Stars will be at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. So I'll have pregame for you at 2. Everything heard right here on 102.5 The Game. So we'll have our show taking you up to Predators pregame, Preds Stars, and that game will be shown on Fox Sports Tennessee and heard right here on 102.5 The Game. And then Columbus, Boston, Arizona, the Predators' opponent, you can watch tomorrow night at 9 o'clock against Vegas. And I suspect a lot of people in these parts, including myself, will be watching to see how the Coyotes look in their game. So that'll be interesting to see both the Coyotes and the Predators have their exhibition game tomorrow, and we'll see how they look. It's the final tune-up to Sunday's action. And, of course, the Predators and Coyotes game one will kick the action off on Sunday. It is here, Chase. All this live sports, NBA returning. We've been talking about Major League Baseball. NHL is got it, these exhibition games, and then all day Saturday and all day Sunday. And, wow, we will have a real reaction Monday, on Monday, which will be great.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome. And then, of course, you know, training camp opening for the NFL, so you have that. But I can't wait. I can't wait to talk about game. And we have. I mean, we've talked about some baseball games and moments in that, but talk about some Preds games. And tomorrow is going to be fun because you know, we'll have the 1 o'clock hour with Elliot Friedman. He'll start and kind of leading up to pregame with you, and you know, Willie will be doing his thing on TV, so we'll be able to talk about that. Jeremy Gover and I are going to do a Facebook Live, a game night after the post game show, so we'll give our reactions to that. So it's going to be a lot of fun, and then of course Friday we'll talk about it and maybe have some questions answered as we get ready for the game on Sunday. So, and we'll have coverage starting at 10 o'clock Sunday morning. Jared and I will be doing that leading into you on pregame.
It's crazy. It's here. And it's going to be fun to see how this all plays out and what it's going to look like. My observations from what I've seen, you know, I was wondering the last couple of weeks of will there be apprehension, you know, considering that we're in a pandemic, or will just all that go away? Instincts take over the minute the puck is dropped. From what I could see yesterday and last night, I think it's going to be instincts, man. I think when the puck drops, these guys go. I saw some, you know, there was an exhibition games last night, and I already saw some bad blood. So some hits and some, you know, face washing and all that good stuff. So I think that's what we should expect. With that being said, let's head up to Edmonton and let's check in with Predators head coach John Hines. He is now with us. Coach, how you doing?
I'm great. How about you guys?
Doing fantastic. We're in Nashville. You're in Edmonton. You're there in the setup, in the bubble. You've been there since Sunday. As we sit here on Wednesday, what are your thoughts right now on the setup in your hub city?
It's been really good. You know, the JW Marriott's really nice. It's connected to the Rogers Center, which is really convenient. It's a big roomy hotel, so there's plenty of room for all the teams. It's really convenient to the practice facilities and the game facilities. Food has been excellent. It's been very easy. There's been no issues really that way. And they've also done a nice job. There's a little, like, a big courtyard around the hotel where they have, like, some food trucks and lawn games, basketball hoops for people to go out and hang out in. There's a bunch of tables there. So it's been nice. It's been no hiccups. Our team's in a really good spot, and I think the people in Edmonton and the league have done a really good job organizing everything. So we're ready to go.
Part of your job, and you haven't been their head coach long, and then there was this big, long pause. If you'd been here for years, you know, it may be a different answer. But because you were still learning your team and your room when the pause happened, and now you're back to that again, and, oh, by the way, we've got this pandemic involved as well. What has been the mood of your team? We were there last week and the week before at Bridgestone Arena when you guys were having your inter-squad scrimmages and practices and training camp. But, you know, we're not around you guys, obviously. You are. What is the mood of the room right now? What's the feel you have of your team?
The feel is a lot different than what it was. You know, obviously when I first came in January and then even through the process of even till the pause, although we had some success and we worked our way into the position we're in now, it just seemed like things were heavy a bit. You know, it was just the belief, the confidence, the enjoyment of coming to the rink and pushing each other, the excitement that and energy that you need guys to be able to have and your team to have when you can really have success. It was you were pulling and pushing for that all the time. And now when we've come back, you know, it was. You know, we really feel we use the time off wisely. You know, we really try to communicate with the players, a lot of meetings, get to know them better. They get to know, you know, particularly me because I'm the new guy and Rob Scuderi. So I think there's much more of a comfort level, I think, personality-wise, interacting with everybody, you know, even for the players to understand, you know, every coach is different, whether it's how you practice or how you communicate, what you demand, what the standards are. All those things are a little bit different. So there's a lot more clarity there. And I would say just, you know, coming back, we've talked about it as coaches and even with David, just there's a different energy about the team. You know, I think they're excited. I think you have guys that maybe had some tough years or, you know, it was a tough year. Coach got fired. The expectations weren't what they wanted to be. That's heavy. They're human beings. Right now it seems like guys are focused, excited, and they're dialed in, ready to go. And I know they're really excited to play tomorrow.
Good news. Predators head coach John Hines is on the line with us up in Edmonton. So what were you looking for in particular to get out of training camp? What were you trying to, you know, sitting there watching and observing? How much stock were you putting into that? It's one thing, Coach, when you go, you know, a normal preseason/training camp, and then you're going into game one of a very long regular season. When you get started on Sunday, it's game one of a qualifying round, and if you don't win three games in that series, you're coming back to Nashville. So a completely different approach. So what were you and your staff looking to try to get out and learn about, you know, these last 2 weeks before you headed to Edmonton?
Right. Well, you know, the first one was kind of different stages. When the guys came back, where were they all at physically? You know, we couldn't do any testing. It was mandated by the NHLPA. So, you know, the first 2 days are coming back, and let's get up and skating, see where the conditioning level is at, make sure we continue to build as training camp goes on, and we have the bodies every day in practice that guys don't have groin pulls and hip flexors, and they're missing things because that would take away from the continuity of what you're trying to establish systematically or special teams-wise. So the guys came back. First 3 days were very good. We did a lot of skating, a lot of offensive attention to detail, puck movement, playing fast. And then we just, as camp went on, we increased some of the defensive detail. We increased numbers, meaning more competitive situations. We introduced then live scrimmage games. And we built the camp to continue to get more intense as it went along. And you know, our goal was to make sure we were going to be in great shape. The second goal is to make sure we had everybody through there and we could build the players up gradually. So when they get here, our systems, everyone had a lot of reps in those things. We didn't have guys missing practices, or you could keep a lot of the combos together that we wanted together because guys didn't have to miss practices. And they were ready. Every time we increased the intensity or every time we increased or put something new in, a little wrinkle in or something we wanted to work on, they were ready for it. So I think a lot of tribute goes to the players. And as I said, like you said, we haven't played against another team yet. But what I can tell you is there wasn't one day as a coach that you had to stop things or you had to motivate them or you had to say, guys, we got to get up and running here. This isn't good enough. We pushed them, but they pushed themselves. And I think that's probably even a bigger difference from before the pause till now. There's a pretty self-motivated group in here. And I think, we feel like we've done as much as we can physically and tactically, and now it's time to test ourselves against an opponent tomorrow.
There's a lot of things through the course of a regular season, as you know, that can play out to make decisions for you, whether it's injuries or what have. Your guys just currently at the time aren't playing well. Some guy is playing better than others. And so you have that constant body of work in a long season where you're playing all the time. And leading into the pause, you had Tenorti and Holzer as your third D pairing. You were basically riding UC Saros as the hot hand. I think he had 15 starts in your last 21 games before the pause. So you've got that body of work. But now you're coming out 4+ months of being off, and the only body of work you have is what you're going to see tomorrow afternoon against Dallas and what you've seen in these last 2 weeks that we've been talking about. So how much stock can you put into basically, air quote, practice? And then you've got to make tough decisions on Sunday.
Yeah, it's a great question. And we really simulated, as we built up camp, we did do two real simulated games at camp, which we told the players these are going to be evaluations because they're near the end of camp. We want to see the system implementation and the tactics be able to be done in a live situation, not in practice drills. The intensity level of those games needed to be high. We told them we still have lineup decisions to make, and the practices are good. That's a slight form of evaluation. The two games that we played together in Nashville, although against our own opponents, were intense and they were evals. And now we have the final one will be tomorrow. But we talked to the players. You have to go on today's news. You can't go on yesterday's news. You have to go on you do take some stock into what happened before, but I think some guys have picked up where they've left off in a good way. Some guys have been way better than they were prior to the pause, which is a really good sign. And then some guys maybe not as good. So, it's really the combination, but I think you have to wait what had gone on prior to that. But I think if a player wasn't as good now as he was then, I think you have to go with today's news.
We're talking to John Hines, the Predators head coach. So going into tomorrow, do you kind of have an idea of what you want to do with the goaltenders, of whether it's splitting it right down the middle to give them both time? How important is that to whoever you go with on Sunday to know that the other one is ready to go, even though you only have the one exhibition game to figure that out?
Yeah, you're exactly right. And I do have an idea. I can't share it with you right now just because
I figured you wouldn't. It's okay.
And the only reason we're not secrets, I haven't had the opportunity yet to let the goalies know what the plan is going to be for tomorrow. So I think it's important that they know first. And then secondly, yes, you do take into consideration that you have one game. So it's going to be, I think it's more how much are you dividing it tomorrow to give both guys an opportunity to play.
What else do you want to see? Because you've mentioned practice and what you've gotten out of your team during practice. So one game, I guess, in my opinion, it isn't going to make a huge difference, like you were saying, of if a guy has it or a guy doesn't. So what are some things that you're wanting to fine-tune against an opponent like Dallas that you know so well tomorrow in that exhibition game?
First is the competitive level we need to be at for game one. You know, you can't tiptoe your way into this exhibition game. You know, we have to play at a level, and it's, you know, there's got to be a physicality level that you play with. That sometimes it's going to be raised. It's going to be raised. Dallas against us, and us against Dallas. Than if it was Nashville versus Nashville in the scrimmages, whether it's, you know, physical contact on the forecheck or battle situations, because you're going against someone that's not your teammate. So I think we need to approach this with the mindset that, you know, we have to be at that intensity level and make sure that we're getting in those situations and playing to a competitive and a speed pace level that we want to have on Sunday. And then the second thing is, you know, can we get to the identity that we want to play with, that we've worked on a regular basis in a more natural game situation? The third thing I think is, you know, you want to go into this and you want to compete very well and you want to have a good game. But I think there's also situations that, because you're playing a different opponent, is there something that we need to touch up on, or we get exposed on, or we've had a little bit of trouble with in this game against Dallas that we can shore up going into Arizona?
John, I brought this up with David a few weeks ago, but obviously for you, I know that the training camp had to be beneficial of seeing some of the younger players that we may not see play during this playoff run, but it's your first chance to really get to see them up close and personal in a training camp setting. So how much do you think that the 24 teams that are returning have a little bit of a leg up of being able to evaluate some of those younger players, especially with a team like the Predators that will have to make some contract decisions after the season is over?
Yeah, it's definitely helpful for the 24 teams that have been involved, and even for us. You know, for me, obviously being a new coach coming in and having an opportunity to see these guys, and even more in a realistic setting. You know, I mean, it's sometimes you get in the training camp and you have all kinds of players in your training camp. You have junior players that are going to get sent back to junior, but now we've had the opportunity to take, you know, some of the more NHL-ready players in our system, be able to come in and practice with our team and play live exhibition games against each other, but probably at maybe a higher level than maybe the first time you scrimmage in training camp with an 82-game schedule. There's a different urgency level to our main players that are here. So it was really good to see those guys come in, get to know them, and even for the players, get to know those kids coming in. They understand how we operate, some of the things that we do. So from a coach's perspective, it was very good. I think it was a unique opportunity for the organization and for the players. And really, when you look at this, regardless of what happens, it's almost like the kids are going to have two training camps, because they have this one, and then you know, hopefully we win the cup, and then a couple months later we're going to be back in training camp, and they're going to get another opportunity, and I think now they know more what to expect.
Sounds like a good plan. As we wrap this up, how did you think the refs did in your scrimmages, John? How did you think they did? The two refs.
I was worried. I had talked to David. I thought that Scott Nickel, I was thinking we might have to find another assistant general manager, that he might get into the ref profession. He looked like an NHL ref. The demeanor, the skating, he was good. He was good. I thought Carl Taylor did a good job. David Good, our strength coach, was there. So I think we're just certainly well prepared from the refereeing perspective.
So you thought Scott he deserved the orange armband, is what you're saying?
He deserved it. He deserved it for sure. He looked good. Yeah, you know, he had the same demeanor. You know, there was one time where there was an icing and Kyle Turris tried to go to the bench and act like his stick was broken and came into the faceoff circle and Scott threw him right out like a normal ref would. It was great.
Hey, thanks for the visit. We'll certainly be watching tomorrow, and best of luck up there. And I hope you're up in Edmonton for a long time, if you know what I mean.
I'm with you. I appreciate that. Thanks for having me on. Always enjoy talking hockey, and we'll talk to you guys soon at some point.
Okay, sounds good. That is Predators head coach John Hines up in Edmonton tomorrow. They will drop the puck at 3 o'clock Central Time between them and the Dallas Stars. I'll have pregame for you starting at 2 right here on 102.5 The Game. We'll come back. Alex Apple, Fox 17, will tell you about Governor Bill Lee's press conference yesterday and the news that came out of that to start the third hour of Darren Donick and Chase. That's next on ESPN 102.5 The Game.